So I'm interviewing a girl, and she's from a town, and the town's name is Djibouti. I thought you'd like that.
Booty.
Hey, ladies, welcome back. This is Emily Thomas. You are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, the show that helps you love your actual life so that you don't need to run away from home. Let's just stay one more day, okay? We'll take it a day at a time. Perfection is nonsense, and peace is a perspective shift away. So I hope to give you a perspective shift today with my interview with Rachel. She explains everything really well, so I'm not going to take time to explain it. But before we get started, marketing department, I need to tell you very exciting news. The Mom Struggling Well shirts are on sale now. That is an amazing way to market your favorite podcast. And the proceeds go to my friend Angeli's ministry called the Moms We Love Club. And any money raised is going to help moms in long-term hardship. If you think about it, we are all one really terrible event away from a hardship. I mean, I think. And even though things might be really bad, we have got it really good. So buy a Mom Struggling Well shirt. They're so soft and delicious. And also help another mom struggle well. You can get your shirts at momstrugglingwell.com/shirts. We got real creative with that URL. And don't wait too long. They're only going to be on sale in September. All right, let's go ahead and get started on my chat with Rachel. Good morning, Rachel. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What time is it where you are in Africa?
5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay. So it's not a ridiculous amount of time, like time difference. Well, it's a ridiculous time difference. I just didn't want it to be like 3 a.m. for you or something.
No. It's perfect.
Okay. So good. All right. So will you please just introduce yourself to my listeners?
Sure. So my name is Rachel and I live in Djibouti, which is in East Africa. It starts with a D, but you say it with a J sound. It's in the Horn of Africa, bordered by Somalia, Ethiopia, Eritrea, and then the Red Sea in the Gulf of Aden with Yemen right across the water. So we're kind of in like a hot spot of countries and a physical hot spot. Like today, I think right now it's 114 degrees, even though it's already 5 p.m.
Wow. What's the highest it gets in the daytime, temperature-wise?
It can get up to 120.
Okay. Even
higher if you add the heat index, but right now it's pretty dry, so it actually feels okay.
Yeah. I'm from Arizona, and we sometimes get up that high as well, but not on a regular basis. But
yeah, that's like every day from May to September.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So how long have you been in Djibouti?
We've been here for 15 and a half years. And a year before that, we lived in Somaliland, which is part of Somalia. So 2003 is when we first moved to Africa.
Okay. And do they, I know in Kenya they have, is it called chapati? Is that, I know there's a lot of eating with your hands with like using pieces of bread to kind of fix it. Is that how it is there in Ethiopia and where you are?
Yeah, Ethiopia, they have something called injera, which is different from chapati, but similar. Like it's a bread, kind of spongy, you scoop up your food. And then here they have one Somali food called laho, which is, it's similar. It's a flatbread. It's made out of sorghum flour. And yeah, you use it to scoop up your food or dip in your tea.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So do you cook then that kind of food or do you try to cook food from America or how does that work?
We mostly eat American food. You have Djibouti is a former French colony. And so there's a lot of French influence. And so we can get pretty Western stuff. But then when we go out, it's pretty easy on the street to get street food and you can get that laho or a bag of fried chicken or a bag of spaghetti. It comes in a plastic bag sometimes, which is pretty fun.
Yes. When we lived in China, everybody would eat, like drink soy milk out of a bag and like everything was in a bag that did not feel like yogurt was in a bag. It was very unusual.
Oil.
Yeah, but it's amazing. You just cut the corner and drink it and like
it's perfect.
It really is. It really is. Okay. So I wanted to talk to you about a lot of the cross-cultural things that you've done. You've raised your kids over there. You have written a book about being a third culture kid, like
four kids. I haven't read that one, but I got the newest one that you wrote about. And so tell me about, I don't know, why are you there? Let's start with that.
Sure. So, I mean, going back 16 years, so 2003, my husband and I knew we wanted to live abroad. We just had a real desire to serve and to be useful in places outside of our, we're from Minnesota, both of us. So outside of our context, we wanted to be challenged and we wanted to be somewhere kind of off the beaten track, which was definitely Somalia. and we lived in this apartment, high rise complex in downtown Minneapolis that was full of Somali refugees.
Okay.
And so as we got to know them and then they got to know us, my husband had a master's degree and he was interested in teaching. Our Somali friends told us about this northern part of Somalia that was peaceful and that had the only, at that time, functional university. And so they, through those friendship connections, they invited him to come teach there. We did that. And then we were in Somalia for about a year and things got too unsettled and too violent and we had to flee. So we kind of joke that we ended up in Djibouti by accident.
Okay.
It wasn't our intention to come here across the border, but same thing. We had Somali connections here and they invited him to come and teach here at the university. And so now he ended up, over the course of all these years, he got his PhD in education. And then eventually now we have launched our own American curriculum, English language school for kids, so K through 12. So he's transitioned out of being a professor at the university, and now we're running this school. So that's what brought us here.
Okay, so you run a school for foreigners living there? Or
anyone.
What?
Anyone. We have a huge mix. So there's local kids, and there's other expatriate kids. It's a pretty good mix. We have, I think this coming year, we have 55 students, and there's maybe 16 or 17 countries represented.
How neat is that?
Yeah, it's really fun.
Oh, I love that. Okay, so I want to talk about what you've learned from being an outsider, because that's very, very valuable, very hard. I remember from living in China, like going outside was, it took all of your strength to just leave the house. At least for me, I may not have been handling it very well. I'm not sure.
How long did you live there?
Over 3 years, but
okay.
Yeah, so talk about, what is it like to be an outsider, both culturally and spiritually?
Yeah, I mean, it can range from sometimes feeling so welcome because we're kind of we're an anomaly. And so people really are hospitable here. And so if I'm at, for example, a wedding, even if I'm not invited, you're welcome to just go to any wedding. So a friend can say, hey, come to my cousin's wedding or my sister's wedding. And then I show up and then I'm just treated like a guest of honor, which is welcoming, and I know that they're trying to honor me, and so I really try to appreciate that. And I think a lot of times that's what I experience even just day to day, so not even at a special event, but like on the street or in the market, people are generally happy to see us. And then I also speak Somali, and so when they see me as an outsider speaking Somali, they just feel really appreciated and honored that I've made that effort.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I have this desire to go to a wedding or to be seen as just a regular person. I don't want to be given the place of honor. I want to be back in the kitchen with my friends, you know, preparing the food and being part of the community in that way. So there's both and to that sense of being welcomed as a foreigner, of it being really an honor from them, but my own desire of wanting to just be normal.
Are you more of like a behind the scenes person in general?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. And then I just have to admit that I'm not normal. I'm not an insider. So I have to own that, you know, I just can't be frustrated or disappointed about that. And then on the other hand, sometimes there's some negative things. There's so many aspects to being an outsider. It's hard to capture them all in a few sentences, but, we also stick out because again, of just, we're white Americans and we stand out. And so when I do go out, in particular, we used to live a few blocks from where we live now, and it was a street that had a lot of just a lot of aggression that happened in the street. Okay. So it kind of felt like what you said about China, where just going out the door would be so hard, and I would I run, and so I would started to feel my anxiety rise as I would get dressed to go outside for a run, because I knew that as soon as I opened the door there would be comments, which I understand because I speak the languages.
Oh, and they assume you don't.
Right, exactly. Or there would be looks. Sometimes they throw stones.
They would literally throw things.
Literally, yeah. Yeah. I've been hit on many parts, including my head.
Why are they throwing stones? They don't want you to be there? Or it's...
Honestly, I don't know. I've tried to get to the bottom of this with some of my local friends, too, and I don't know.
And they don't know either?
Yeah, they don't know either. I've been with them sometimes when it happened. The one where I got hit in the head, I was running in a race, and I was with three Djiboutian girls that were all that kind of around me, and I got hit in the head with a stone. I don't know why. I think part of it is just like, hey, stranger.
Oh, welcome.
yeah.
Wow.
Sometimes it's because they don't want you here. This is going to make it sound like the people are not welcoming, and most of the time they are, but over 16 years, things happen.
Yeah.
So like that particular area, when we realized that that's what was going to happen, almost every time that I left the house, we moved.
Okay.
And now we're just a few blocks away and I haven't had any of those issues.
Okay.
And so, you know, it could just be certain neighborhoods, just like anywhere where you have different kinds of people in different neighborhoods. So.
Another special thank you to my friends at BetterHelp. I know this is resonating with y'all because I get more messages in my Instagram asking, what was the name of that counseling app that you told me about? They will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You have so many more specialties to choose from because they're anywhere in the world. You can sign up and be communicating with a counselor in less than 24 hours. Sometimes getting an appointment and then getting in to see a counselor, the whole thing can take weeks, but not with BetterHelp. BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, is committed to facilitating really great therapeutic matches, and you get to switch counselors for free easily if who you have is not a great match. So visit betterhelp.com/MSW and join the over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. And also, they're giving a special offer to moms who are struggling well. To get 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/MSW. That's betterhelp.com/MSW. What have you learned from being an outsider?
I think one thing I've really learned is how to really lean into being courageous, like forcing myself out the door, even if I feel nervous, or forcing myself to ask for help when I need it because I know I'm an outsider. So there's been some really enforced humility, which has been really good for me. Sometimes I feel like I still, after all these years, I'm just a baby culturally.
Okay.
And so I really need to rely on my local friends. So there's that, I've had to learn to be humble and then learn to be courageous. And then just learn that I'm always going to be a little strange here. Mm. sometimes I want to fit in. I'm just always going to be strange. The clothes that I wear or the food that we eat, I'm never going to be local. I think when we first moved abroad, I think for a lot of people when they first move abroad, there's this ideal, hopeful ideal that you'll just kind of, you'll become a local person. You'll just fit right in and you'll learn the language and your kids will adjust. And it just doesn't happen that way. We're always a little off. And then now when we go back to the U.S., we're a little off when we're there too.
Yes. You don't exactly fit anywhere.
Yeah. Which can be really hard, but can also be really precious because it bonds our family together in special ways, and it bonds my husband and I together, or with other foreigners, even Djiboutians who have lived abroad and then come back.
Yeah.
We connect with them really well because we sense that same kind of where is home, where do I belong sort of thing. And so really, I think I've learned a lot about making home and being comfortable with who I am wherever I am, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you'd have to really kind of drill down and find the solid part of your identity in Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because nothing else really fits for sure.
Right. Yeah, that identity in Christ is the root that just goes deep, you know, and holds me steady when kind of the earth around that root shifts, maybe Djiboutian earth or American earth. But who I know that I belong to Christ no matter what.
I found that when I lived in China, sharing my faith was really easy because they expected that I was Christian because everybody in America is Christian.
Right.
Right. And so when I talked about it, they didn't go, oh, wow, you're not like me. I didn't know that. They knew I'm not like them, and they expected that I was a Christian so I could share my faith. But being here back home, yeah, there's so much baggage that comes with that word that I don't want to. So I don't know. I appreciated the freedom of looking so different.
Yes, definitely. There is that freedom, both, like you said, with being a Christian and with so many things. Like, yeah, I can be weird, which I just feel like I'm being normal, but, you know, it seems weird. Yes. And I can live that way with being comfortable. It's the same here with people. Djibouti is, I think, 90 or 95% Muslim. And so they definitely have the same assumptions. And it's very easy to talk about faith because Islam is really a part of daily life. You know, there's the call to prayer 5 times a day. There's the whole month of fasting during Ramadan. There's the clothing people wear. You know, it's very meaningful spiritually to them. And so even though our, you know, specifics are different, we share a lot of things in common. And it's very easy to talk about faith and to even be encouraged by each other. You know, I'm really challenged by my Muslim friends and their fast for a month with no water. And it's 115 degrees.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know there was no water involved either.
Yeah, from sunrise to sunset.
Tell me about, because I love what you just said about how you're challenged in your faith by them and their faith. Because I think sometimes we think, well, that can't possibly be because they're wrong and I'm right. And they're bad and I'm good. And none of that stuff is true. But it feels safer to make those quote unquote rules to live in. And so talk to me about what you love about living among the Muslim people.
Mm-hmm. I do love how much a part of their daily life faith is. It's not unusual to say things like praise God or thanks be to God. And they say it in Somali or in Arabic, but everything is Godward in their attitude, which I really appreciate. And it's just the fabric of their day. The week is structured around Friday being the holy day. So Friday is our day off. So when people go to the mosque, if they can, and then their day is structured around these 5 prayers, and there's several mosques within hearing distance of our house. Okay. And so I hear the call to prayer. And that it's just a reminder that God is great and it's time to pray. That's what the muezzin is singing. I really am thankful for that. I'm thankful that we're able to talk about prayer just as a regular thing. So even if it's not the structured prayer, but I can just pray for a friend and they are thankful for that, and vice versa. There's a lot of appreciation for modesty, for family values, for good marriages, you know, things that I feel like there's a lot that we share in common, a lot more in common than a lot of people in the U.S. might assume.
Yeah. What do we get wrong about Muslims? I'm sure mostly everything, but tell me the first things that come to your head.
Well, I'm just thinking about some of my friends who have kids in public schools in Minnesota, and they're Christians, and they feel like they're kind of alone in sort of on the PTA or in trying to promote some of their values in the classroom. And I've really encouraged them that, hey, those Somali parents, Somalis, a lot of them have settled in Minneapolis, so there's a lot in the area where I'm from. Those parents share your values. And, you know, get to know them. And so I think that that's kind of mind opening to a lot of people in the U.S. I have people tell me when I come back, they say, you know, there's a lot of Muslims at Target now. And they're kind of, and they're like, I feel kind of afraid.
Okay.
And I just want to tell them, like, that's your people. They're people of faith. You know, if you want to talk about raising your kids and be encouraged to raise kids that know God, that's a person you can connect with. And so I think that is definitely something a lot of American Christians get wrong, that they're afraid of a Muslim instead of thinking of them as a real ally in family life and in even being encouraged in their faith.
That's a really interesting perspective. I got to say that I don't ever know how to start a conversation. I know that's so dumb. They're a person. Make your face talk to their face. Like, I don't even know. But I make it. I don't know.
I think it helps for me because I know some basics. So one time it was Eid, which is a high holy holiday for Muslims. And I was at Target. And then again, in Minneapolis,
where all the Muslims are. Just kidding.
I mean, the cashiers were Somali. And so I just said to the cashier, Eid Mubarak, which means happy Eid or, you know, holy Eid. And she almost started crying.
Oh,
and she said, thank you so much. Nobody else even knows that it's my holiday.
Can you even imagine having to work at Target on Christmas or something and nobody even knows it's Christmas?
Right. And it just meant so much to her. I mean, of course, I didn't develop a friendship with her. But actually, one time at Old Navy, again, the cashier was a Somali girl, and we started chatting. And I told her about my website, which is called Djibouti Jones. And she ended up, because I was buying all this kind of summer clothes, and she wondered why I was getting hot clothes at that time of year. So we just started talking about Africa. And she was from Djibouti.
Okay, no way.
She ended up following my website, and we've kind of stayed in touch. And so, you know, I think just starting conversation about anything. It doesn't have to be that you know their holiday or that you've been to their country, but just talking to them like they're a regular person. And that honestly will be so unusual to them in their experience from an American that they'll respond. I mean, I shouldn't say all, but in general, there's a positive response because that stands out from someone who either ignores them or stares at them or kind of acts cold.
Yes. I think what I want to do, I think I set my bar too high, and I want to have my first interaction be so meaningful to them and helpful and like heal all the hurts that they've experienced and are, you know what I mean? And so I think, how do I do that in a cashier transaction? I don't know. I'm not doing anything. So anyway, maybe there's a middle ground.
I do think they remember, like, if, you know, just something, just a general kindness, because there is so much animosity that I've heard that they experience that, you know, just a special thank you, or I'm so glad you're here. I don't know. That might sound weird. Maybe they're multi-generational.
I know. They're like, hey, jerk. You know, I know. That's so hard, right? It was funny in China. I had been there for years, and someone would see me on the bus and sing me a welcome song, like to the whole bus, welcoming me to their country. And if I see, you know, someone from China here, like you said, they may never have not been on American soil, and I would be considered so insensitive. It's all very confusing.
I have talked to Somalis in Somali, and they'll usually, if they're young, they're like, yeah, I don't speak Somali.
Okay.
And so then we still have a great conversation, though. Then they're curious, you know, why do you speak it? And then we start talking about their parents and what refugee camp they maybe came through to get to the U.S. And so there's still a way to connect, but it can be kind of strange.
Yes.
I want to say a special thank you to PrepDish, who has been a longtime supporter of the Mom Struggling Well podcast. So my friend Allison started PrepDish, and basically she picks what you eat so you don't have to use your brain to make another meal plan. She makes your grocery list. She tells you what order to prep everything so that you save time. If I could only get her to do my laundry. But that's fine. We're going to have to stop with her fixing all my food problems. It's all clean food. And if you want, you can substitute things that make it go faster. You do you. I can tell you that on the list this week is a lasagna, almond butter brownies, Cajun shrimp. My Louisiana husband is going to be super pumped about that. Anyway, you can try it free for 2 months if you haven't tried it yet. In the Patreon group this week, the girls were just talking about how much they love it. Give it a try. Come on. Go to prepdish.com/MSW and you can try it free for 2 weeks. That's prepdish.com/MSW.
So you mentioned that you sometimes feel like you're not contributing enough as a mom because it's so hot. You don't feel like doing anything and you just don't have any energy and there's no summer camp. And you think of all the things your kids are missing out on not being raised in Minnesota. But then I don't want to tell your story, but you said, but they do swim with whale sharks. Is that right? Bull sharks?
Yeah.
Some kind of shark?
Whale sharks, not bull sharks.
I don't know the
bull
difference.
Bull sharks are aggressive.
Okay, great. Which is really a good idea to stay away from them then.
Yes,
you know, they speak French and all that kind of stuff. So talk about, I don't know, all that they are getting versus all that they're not.
Yeah. That's been a choice I've had to make over the years to really consciously focus on what they're getting. And honestly, my husband's is always like, hey, they're getting this awesome life. Why are you being so negative? And the kids themselves are like, we love it here. What are you talking about? So it's a lot of it is just me feeling like I'm not doing something I'm supposed to do, which comes from social media kind of pressure or what other people are posting. But yeah, my kids have had these incredible experiences of they went to French school from preschool through sixth grade, all of them. And so they're fluent in French. Their accents are just beautiful.
Oh, I love that.
They have this unique ability to go in and out of cultures and they connect with people really naturally. My daughter now is at university in Minnesota and she has connected with these Ethiopian girls. And my son in Wisconsin at college joined the African Student Association because he just feels home there. So they're able to kind of go in and out of, like, be a bridge person between different cultures.
So many more of those.
Right? Yeah. So some of their unique experiences are, like swimming with whale sharks. They come through our gulf here, the Gulf of Tajura, every winter. And a whale shark is peaceful. They don't have teeth. But they are huge. And we just rent, you just get a boat at the beach and you drive, like go out in the water and just jump in and there they are. So they have, they've learned how to scuba dive already. And they have these just really, it's just different. It's not the childhood that I had, which I think was what I was comparing it to. There's some big losses that they've had where they haven't been raised by grandparents or, you know, nearby relatives, or they've had to say goodbye to a lot of friends over and over as other kids have come and gone. But they also just have this real unique way of seeing the world and of being in the world that I love. And they've, the way that God has met them in each of their, in those losses of a friend or of a place, they've really had to rely on God, which is huge. You know, that's what I want more than anything
for them. That's the goal. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. I think that we all can look at what we're not providing, but we are providing so much. We just don't even realize it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So this is going to be a hot topic and I'm so excited that you brought it up, but schooling is, that will make friends into enemies, mothers. How do you school your children? I have happened to be, we've done homeschool, private school, and now they're in public school, and they have not died. So, and I still love them. But you sent your kids to boarding school, which honestly sounds amazing some days. But you said that someone told you they love their kids too much to send them to boarding school. First of all, that is so rude. But second of all, you said you love your kids too much not to send them to boarding school. So tell me everything.
Yeah, that's not been said to me only one time. There's a lot of things people say about boarding school. And I never thought that we would choose boarding school. It wasn't on my radar screen, but I am not an educator. I'm like an uneducator. Okay. I feel like.
You got to know what you are and where you're at.
Yeah. I try to teach the kids something and they're like, I have no idea. And then my husband will explain it and they're like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But he was working full time. And so if we had chosen to homeschool, it would have been me. It would have been a disaster for us as a family. And then Djibouti, so Djibouti is small. There is a French school that was really good that they were at, you know, all the way through sixth grade. They could have continued to high school. So that was the local option. And then there was homeschool, and then there was boarding school, or there was leave. We could have left. So as we were just wrestling through this decision and talking to the kids about it too, we were not excited about the high school option here, just the quality of education, the community. Even their local friends, our Djiboutian friends who are kind of peers in terms of other professors and their families and things like that, were going to France or Canada or sending their kids away for that age. And then there's not a lot of, like, there's nothing to do. we just got a movie theater literally 2 or 3 weeks ago for the first time. So there's not a lot of social events. There's no sports teams for the kids. I mean, there's a few, but not a lot. Music opportunities, just everything else besides academic. You know, so if we had homeschooled, it would have been me and my three kids in the house by ourselves all the time, which sounds not okay.
That makes me nervous just even thinking about it. Yeah.
There's no co-op. You know, there's none of that stuff. So then we really were left with, and knowing my kids are super social, they really wanted to kind of expand their skill sets and things. So we really wrestled with them, like, should we go back to the U.S.? We would do that. We're open to that with joy, you know? Mm-hmm. Or would you like to try boarding school? And the schools in Kenya that we were looking at, which is, you know, a four-hour flight away. And they said, do not leave Africa. Don't leave Djibouti.
Okay. Your kid said that.
Yes. And okay. Even our youngest right now, she's 13. When she told me about a month ago, she said that we're not allowed to leave Djibouti until she graduates from high school because she wants to stay at the boarding school. And so they all had said, you know, at least we'll try it. So we said, okay, you know, I just took a deep breath. I cried a lot of tears. And then we decided to try it. And they just thrived. I mean, all three of them. So they didn't all start at the same time. We have twins and they started in junior high. And then our youngest started when she got to junior high.
And what country did they go to?
Kenya.
Oh, they went to Kenya. Okay, cool. All right.
Yeah, it's an American school there, American Christian school. And yeah, they just, like, we saw them blossom in terms of academics and sports and character. And I just don't think that any parent is designed to parent alone. I do believe that God gives us our kids, that we are responsible for them, you know, while they're under our care. And I do feel like I'm still responsible for them. I didn't ship them out from under me. But I also feel like I know my limitations and I need more. They need more than what just I had to offer. And so when I look at, now that I know from experience, the community of other people that have mentored them, just invested in them and loved them, it's a gift. Even though it breaks my heart, and I still cry about it, because I want to be with them. What they have gotten is a gift. And they would say that too so far. Maybe they'll change their mind as they get older, but they've all said that they're really thankful for the experience and for the friendships they've made. And I just don't think that because something hurts us as a parent, that we shouldn't do it for our child if it's right for them. And so it was the hardest decision that we've ever made. And I still sometimes on a bad day will wonder if it was the right decision. But then I look at my kids and they're just these incredible people. Mm. And I don't know if they would have turned out that way if we made a different decision. I don't know. I can't play that game. You know, it's not fair.
Yeah. What I love that you said is that they can, you can try it. Like, I think we think we're going into something we can't get out of when we're schooling or even when we're making parenting choices. We don't know what we're doing and we don't know the future. We're just going to give it a shot.
Yeah. And we consistently told them every year, you know, is this what you want to do next year? And they always said yes without even hesitation. And we made it clear that they can come back. They could take a term and come back. And I would go down as often as I could, as often as we could afford it. Or if there was a big game tournament or they were in the drama, I would go.
Yeah.
And so we just made those financial choices to prioritize that. And so it's not something that a lot of people would choose. And I know it's something that a lot of people have a lot of opinions about. But also just another thing to say in this context in Africa, boarding school is a normal thing. In my community, in my local community, and even in my expat but not American community,
yes,
if you have an opportunity to send your child to a good school, you do it. And the family has not yet become such an idol that it is sometimes in the U.S.
And so that is such an important thing for us to get out of our Western worldview where we think, I love it.
And then guess what, parents? They graduate and they leave you.
Anyway,
so at some point you have to let them go. And we did it a couple years earlier, but they're not you. You don't own them. And so, you got to let them go at some point.
I love that. And I know that you can say it boldly because you are not on this continent. So I appreciate you saying it. No, it's good. It's so, so true. Yeah. I love it. You know, I think some of us would want to set our kids away because it's just too hard and we want to be done with it. And then some of us want to keep our kids because we're just too afraid to let them go. But it sounds like you did it because it's the right thing for them. And that's all we ever can want as parents. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I miss them all the time. But
I bet. So they go away for 9 months or do they come back?
No. Thank goodness. No, they go, it's usually like 10 weeks away and then 4 weeks back. Okay. So they have a really short summer break and then big breaks during the year. And then I would go every 4 or 5 weeks. So almost like every 6 weeks we'd have, you know, a time together.
I love that.
If that makes sense. Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to research that for my children. Just kidding. My daughter sometimes listens to this and she's always like so mad at me for saying things like that. So sorry, Lane. You aren't going to Kenya. Don't worry. Okay. So I know that all around the world, people experience God in different ways. And very honestly, here in America, we don't, quote unquote, you know, we don't perceive that we need God. So I think we don't see him at work as much as he is at work and as much as we could if we realized our need. How, living there, are you experiencing God in unique ways that you didn't before?
What a good question. It's really easy here to feel lonely. There are other expats and I have good local friends, but it's a small community, and like I said before, people come and go a lot. So I get weary of making a new friendship, and then within a year or two, which is a common contract for a foreigner, they're gone, and we just keep on staying. And so that loneliness and the real desire to belong to something has had to be met in God and in Christ. To say something as kind of trite as God's my friend sounds silly. Mm. I don't mean like that in a small way, but in a deep way that like, this is my, like God is just with me and around me in a very tangible way because I need that relationship that will not leave me. That is not coming and not going. That's not changing. That's just a part of me. And so that, it doesn't necessarily take away the loneliness, but knowing that I have that consistent relationship with the Lord and in the Word that is encouraging and that's foundational. And so I meet God there. And then I think just in the real evidence of human brokenness and the need for God to be just and good and powerful is very prevalent every day. There's 60% unemployment here. There is, disease that is just like, we see people who have been crippled from polio, who have been, you know, affected by mental illness and are just wandering the streets because there's no place to go. And so there's just a lot of pain. There's refugees coming from Yemen, just flooding over or leaving from Africa, going out the coast through Djibouti. And so I feel like that the need, for God to prove himself as good and present and powerful is very real to me.
And
even if
he?
It's just me, I was going to say, even if it's me just crying out and saying, come on, do something, God, prove yourself here.
Yeah.
Show that you're just. Do something for these women who are being oppressed. And sometimes, sometimes I do see God move, and sometimes it's just the continued longing to see more of it. But I do believe that, the presence, I do believe he's present always. And that is something that's really evident and powerful to me here for sure.
Yeah. How would you say the people experience God of Africa different than we do? Like, what do you think in their faith and in their traditions, they're really getting right and we kind of miss it?
I think they have more of that sense of that interaction daily, of that, the very kind of physical practicality sense of God. At least for me, my faith in the U.S. was very spiritual and kind of heady. Like I have this intellectual assent to a theological phrase, you know, that I believe about God. But here, God is very much a part of life. So in some ways, this isn't Islam. This is more folk religion, but people will make little sacrifices for, you know, for protection, or for babies when they're born, they have a lot of rituals around that to sort of protect the baby, which I don't think have power, but they're, well, they do in some ways, honestly, because the people, it's complicated, but they, there's this acknowledgement that the spiritual life is very real and very present.
Yes. Even in the fact of acknowledging that there is something bigger than you, that's, there's power in that. Yeah.
Yes. There you go. That's it. And so I appreciate that. And I think that Americans, or I miss that a lot anyway, in my American evangelical faith, of taking it from the realm of idea and faith into very practical day-to-day thing.
It's so interesting, even when we like are giving, like even those of us who are like, I am going to give to the church, you know, or whatever, I'm going to give back. It's done like automatically taken out of our paycheck. Like, so, I mean, even if we are giving, we don't even know we're giving. We don't even notice, you know? So I don't know. I think I love that idea of just actually practically doing something. What were you saying? I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, just one time I was cutting my fingernails and my local friend saw me and I was just dropping them into the sink. And she said, oh, no, no, you have to gather them up and burn them because otherwise someone can take them and use them to curse you, which again is a very different way of thinking about spirituality. But to me, it was a reminder of how much they saw, or she saw, the spiritual life as part of her practical life.
And yeah, it's all connected.
Yeah. And then like with giving, like you said, you know, giving here is very much my hand to your hand of the person who needs something, whether it's someone who needs a meal or someone who needs some a prescription filled and I take them to the pharmacy. It's very much in my face as opposed to, like you said, taking it out of a check automatic. So it's tangible, tangible. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. I want to ask you one last question. What can you not stop talking about these days?
Yeah, this is super random compared to the conversation that we've just had.
It's fine. Yeah.
I have this pair of running shoes that I love. I don't know anyone else who uses them. They're called Altra with an A, A-L-T-R-A.
Okay. Are they, where are they from?
The U.S.
Okay.
So I have to get shoes or whatever I get and I order them. I don't have a chance to try them on. So I usually just pick a brand and I wear the same thing because I can get them and they work. But I started... For some reason, the kinds I was ordering, they started narrowing the toe box, the part up top where your toes go. And so I was burning through the edges when I was running. I run a lot.
And, yeah, it sounds like. Wow.
Yeah. And I just was getting so frustrated. I couldn't find one that was made for apparently wide feet. And then I got this pair called Ultras and they're just like, people make fun of them. They call them clown shoes because they're so wide in the top.
Okay,
they're not that wide, but they just kind of go straight instead of coming in. And so they're not very cute, but they are awesome. And so I just have lots of room for my toes to get all sweaty and wiggle around. And I love it. So that's the shoes I'm going to order now.
That's great. I love it.
Yeah.
I wish I was a runner. I wish I wanted to be a runner. But I don't. I only burn through like the thighs of my pants. That's what I burn through, not running shoes. It's all right. We all have different skills. Okay, so I just want to say thank you so much for talking to me today. This has been a fascinating conversation and really encouraging and convicting.
Well, thanks for hosting me. It's great talking to you.
Wasn't that good? What a sweet, kind, calming presence, right? So what will your strategy to struggle well be based on what Rachel said today? My notes about this chat are long. I got a lot out of that. I really hope you were challenged in your views on Muslims. I know I was challenged to try not to make it such a big deal to have a conversation. Maybe you take a moment and learn what are the Muslim holidays so that you can have something to say. I love what she said about what she's learned, that the Muslims have a Godward attitude in all areas of their life. Maybe you struggle well this week by really challenging yourself to do that more. What does that look like? And in the end, she talked about, is our faith spiritual? Is it kind of head knowledge, or is it actually practical in the day-to-day, minute-by-minute, not fancy, regular, boring moments of our life? Maybe you could identify with what Rachel said because you also feel like an outsider. Doesn't matter where you are, you don't quite fit. And that may be actual or it may be perceived. I love what she said about pushing herself to be courageous. So maybe you do that this week.
you don't feel like you fit, but you're going to keep moving forward even though. Maybe that's to make a play date. Maybe it's to go to a play date. Maybe it's to go outside and run or do something in public that you don't like people to see. I mean, as long as it's appropriate, don't get arrested. Like, I don't like running in front of people. Well, I've been pushing past that and now I'm doing it and it's fine. In fact, at the end of that, I said I wasn't a runner and I thought, oh my gosh, well, I'm still not really a runner, but more a runner than I was when I recorded this interview. And if you feel like an outsider, I don't mean to like be cheesy here, but Jesus was an outsider. He gets it. I loved what she said about God is her friend. And it can seem cheesy, but if you're really lonely, that's not cheesy. So maybe you struggle well this week by considering, how good of a friend have you been back? Like, if this was an actual relationship, would you have one? Because it is an actual relationship. But a lot of times we don't see it that way. Okay, so Rachel said that sometimes family is an idol. What? So family is tricky. It is easy to either overvalue them or undervalue them. All of us are somewhere on that spectrum. I tend to really value accomplishment, tasks. I value myself very highly. I am a fan of me. And as a result of that, I view my family as burdens or in the way, they're speed bumps that slow me down and I don't appreciate it. That is not right. That is messed up. But some of us lift our families up even above God. I think it's very common to get kids above the marriage relationship, which is also not the right order, but to have it above God and have all of your devotion and all of your thoughts toward your children, they're amazing and they are definitely gifts. They are not the gift. And just like any idol, they will let you down. And that's too much to put on a kid anyway, you know? They can sense that pressure. So basically, some of us need to start caring, and some of us need to take it easy with all that caring. Maybe you struggle all this week by looking into boarding schools. Just kidding. I like what she said about the boarding school decision being a really hard one for her and one that she still cries about. Sometimes we make the right choice and we know that it's the right choice, but it's still, we still feel sad about it. There's still some loss associated with it. That doesn't mean it's the wrong choice. And like she said, just try it. Make a choice, try it. There are a few things that are permanent. I would love for all of us to struggle well this week by doing this. Sometimes when we're moms, / most of the time when we're moms, we feel like we're not doing enough. Why is that? Because our little people are telling us we're not doing enough. You just come back from the zoo and they're mad that you're not taking them to a movie. Stop. So instead of thinking, what are my kids missing out on because I am so inferior, realize that you are providing so many awesome experiences for them. And their childhoods are not going to look like ours, and that is okay. So just realize that you are enough, you are doing enough, and you have heard enough of their complaining. Do me a favor and share this episode with somebody who you think might benefit from it. And make sure you're subscribed to the show, because next week, Katie and I are talking about September, and you know I've got some September packs. How could I not? And also, just a reminder, if you shop on Amazon, I know you do like 9 times a day, first go to amazon.com/shop/momstrugglingwell, and Amazon will give a couple of pennies of your purchase toward the show. It doesn't cost you any extra. It's a great way to support the show. Also, don't forget to join me at Mom Struggling Well on Instagram and Facebook. If you want extra content, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/momstrugglingwell. You can get extra stuff, extra perks, a private Facebook group. We have a lot of fun together. And just remember, ladies, this week, you can stop striving. You're already enough. You're doing a good job. Let me pray for us. God, thank you that when we feel like an outsider, you can identify. Thank you that when we feel lonely, you're always right there. Thank you that you are the most faithful friend that we will ever have. Lord, this week, will you please remind us that you see us and all that we're doing? Remind us that we are doing enough. You're pleased with us, even if we didn't do anything. That is a hard one for me to wrap my head around, but it's true. In Jesus' name, amen.